I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolfe, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 415.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I've got a little more energy this week than I had last week. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we're back. We're back for post-game three. And this is the second podcast since I got home from the hospital. So I'm a week better than I was last time. So everything's looking good so far. How are things on your end?
Things are doing well. You're improving, and the football team's improving.
Yeah, I got my running game going this week. I got my walking game going this week. Put it that way. Yeah, I was actually able to get off the sofa today for the first time without having to have somebody help me and screaming in pain and agony. So that's progress right there. Still not moving around great, but I'll get there. To borrow the concept from Jared's superhero battles, I feel like I went a few rounds with Wolverine, and I don't have his healing factor, but he certainly had his claws, so I look like I lost a fight with Wolverine, but I feel a whole lot better, so hopefully we won't have to worry much about that anymore. We can move on forward. So how do we feel about Auburn after three games, John?
I feel pretty good. I mean, I think we've beaten one very good team, one good team, and one bad team.
Yeah.
But also, I think the team each week has, you know, worked on things, and I think shown improvement in areas where they, you know, needed to improve. So I think that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. And I think within each game, the team has adjusted to what the opponent was doing and shown improvements. I think that's a really big thing. So, and I think you can see, I mean, anybody can watch this team and see that the ceiling is very much higher than we have seen so far.
Yeah.
Like, if they had all the pieces and everybody played as well as they could play,
right,
it is way higher than we have seen. But, you know, that's not where we are today, headed to week four. And we got to go on a road game with a young quarterback, and that's a little scary.
And I guess there are several areas of concern that we've been monitoring all season. And one's been persistent injuries, and now they're striking the offensive line, which was the last thing we needed. We'll get to that in a minute. One was the quality of the running game, the old depth versus diversity question. We'll get to that. One was the defense continues to be both dominant but also occasionally raise troubling questions. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, but I will point this out while I'm thinking about it. For all our defensive line is so great, in the first quarter of the game Saturday, they acted like they had never heard that the screen pass was a legal football play. They were just like, full bore, hell or high water, we're getting to the quarterback whether he has a ball or not. And that's all well and good, except when the other team's throwing screen passes every play, it doesn't do anything but wear you out. All right, so we'll get to that. But I want to start with the special teams. We need to give credit where it's due. I don't think Anders Carlson has missed more than one field goal. I believe he missed one against Oregon. Yeah.
I believe that's correct.
I believe he missed one against Oregon, like 40-something yards, made all of his others, and I don't think he's missed since then.
That's correct.
Okay, so he's
I would, 5-for-6 for the season.
5-for-6, yeah. That's better than last year. Now, to be fair, last year it seemed like half his attempts were like 55 yards.
And
he wasn't doing great at those. This year,
we're putting him in better position.
Yes. This year, we're asking him to make realistic field goals rather than stuff your brother did as a fifth-year senior, you know. So that was a little bit much to ask a freshman. But I think this year they're being much more realistic with what he's able to do, and it's paying dividends. So let's talk about the special teams for a second. I know our primary concern was punt coverage. What did you think about – did we punt? that's one way to solve that problem. Never punt.
Well, yeah, it is 100% the best way to solve the problem is just never punt. We punted twice, 0 return yards.
Yeah, all right. That's good. Do you think did they adjust how – Bloomin' Onion was kicking the ball, or did they?
It seemed like he kicked shorter.
Okay, but maybe higher or something, more hang time.
Yes. I think it was more a hang time, shorter kick, and not a kick it as far as you can kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe he just kind of got on this whole thing of I've gotten better and I'm just going to kick the cover off the ball, and he was like actively harming our, you know, our play by doing that. You know, that was speculated upon.
So, possible. Yeah. But, I mean, that, you know, the guys on the coverage team got to do their job, too.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. What about the rest of special teams? I thought the kickoffs continued to be great. Kickoff and coverage.
Our return teams have been really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Christian Tutt has been really good. He's been sure-handed and also very decisive.
He is due, is he not?
Yes. And I think we will 100% score on a punt return and a kickoff return this season.
Yeah.
It is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we got Shivers and Igbenogany back on the kickoff returns, and they're both really good. And I think when they've gotten the ball and had a chance, they made stuff happen. So I think they and Tutt both are can make stuff happen if the opponent gives them a chance.
I'll go ahead on the record now and say we're going to run a kick or punt one back against Arkansas.
All right.
All right. So noted. Noted. The defense. Now, I was talking about they acted like they didn't know what a screen pass was. What else should we talk about in terms of the defense?
I mean, in every single game, the first drive has been an issue. We've started slow.
Yeah, we've come from behind in every game, I noted.
We have. We're the comeback kids, kind of.
I wish I had that sound clip. Tonight, New Hampshire has made Auburn Tigers the comeback kid. Hillary and Aubie together, we're going to win.
I don't read too much into that. And I think, again, a lot of times teams have their best plays kind of teed up at the beginning. And the things they think will really work, and they do them. And then the great thing is Auburn really is adjusting well to what the opponent is doing on offense. And this was not the best game our defense has played. And the tackling was kind of B-. Like you said, there was a little bit of kind of undisciplined rush when we knew the opponent's goal was to get the ball out fast. Do I think that's revealed some weaknesses in our team? No, zero. I mean, that honestly, the defense knew that Kent State was overmatched and that we were in good shape. And, you know, Derek Brown did today. And I think they kind of let their foot off the gas a little bit, honestly.
Okay.
And again, in the second half, we played a lot of guys.
Yeah,
a lot. So,
We really want to talk about the running game. We certainly spread it around this time. I don't quite know what to take or make from that because, you know, people were saying that Harold Joyner was in the doghouse or they didn't want to use him as a tailback type running back, a feature back. But he did get in some plays that way toward the end and seemed pretty decent. In fact, let's look at this since I went to the trouble of bringing it up here. So Whitlow had 17 for 135 and two touchdowns. So he's on track for 1,000 yards like we would expect for this year. He's probably already got over 300. Gatewood and Shivers both 12 carries for 102. Gatewood had two touchdowns. That was interesting to me that they both got 12 carries. Cam Martin, 7 for 71. He actually had the best yards per carry of anybody because he averaged over 10 yards a carry. He had some good runs. I don't know if he could do that against a big SEC defense, but certainly against a team like Kent State, Cam Martin is going to be look like a world beater. And then Bo Nix carried 7 times for 21. He lost, a couple of yards on sacks and stuff. Joyner, 4 carries for 19, so right around, and his long was 6, so he pretty much had about 5 yards a carry. And then even Malik Miller got a couple of carries in for 13. So what did you make of the running backs and Gatewood?
I mean, I think they did what we, other than DJ Williams not playing, because I guess he's still banged up. Yeah. I think they did what we wanted them to do, which was play the other tailbacks, rotate regularly, don't overdo Whitlow in this game. And they didn't. I think they substituted regularly and often. And it wasn't just like Whitlow's done, then the next guy plays, and that guy's done, the next guy plays. They actively brought in Cam Martin a couple, for several plays earlier in the game to give Whitlow breathers.
Yeah.
And I think that was the best Cam Martin has looked in 2 years. It wasn't just that it was an overmatched team. He looked decisive and explosive.
If he gets to the second level and isn't taken down, he can put a move on the linebackers and the safeties.
But it's not just that. It's like he gets through the hole and then he just – and then he has the ability to really accelerate. And yes, I think he just kind of did that one cut go thing, and that's his game. He's not a juke all over the place kind of guy. He can make that one cut and really accelerate away from people. And he was doing that. But I just think he looked better than I have seen him look in a while. I was happy about that. And then I think Shivers looked the best he's looked this year by far.
Oh yeah. By far.
I don't know what was going on in the other games, but he looked really good in this game, like kind of like we expected him to look all season. And I think back to being a guy that I feel 100% could be, 5 to 10 carries a game, change of pace guy.
Well, it's amazing how much better Shivers does when you don't run him up the middle into a 350-pound nose tackle.
Yes.
Makes a little difference, doesn't it?
It does. You got to use him the right way. And I think he's, like you're saying, he's an outside guy. And when used that way, I think he makes a huge difference. You talked about Gatewood. I mean, I think when we have to run the ball, he is the answer. Whether it's red zone, short yardage, we're ahead and we're trying to grind out the clock. If Auburn has to run the ball, Gatewood is the answer. I think, it's easy to say like, oh, we wish it wasn't that way. We wish we could, had the offensive line and the tailbacks where we didn't have to do that. But I think to me it is very clear that the best running option we have is Gatewood. So if we're in a situation where we have to run, I think we need to put him in the game.
It's interesting.
I'm not saying he needs to start and that kind of stuff, but I just think we need to use him that way.
It's interesting. It almost makes us like the 2006 Florida team.
Yes.
Where Bo Nix is Leak and Gatewood is the way they used Tebow as a freshman. Because, I mean, I if I recall correctly, in 06, Florida's offense was about, it was about 80% Chris Leak, but it was about 20% Tebow. But they put Tebow in there when they needed, you know, that short yardage power. They didn't really have a running back that they went to for that. They went to him, and he delivered.
That's right. It's exactly right. They didn't have a running back that did that stuff. It was Tebow, and I think Gatewood can be that for us. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we have a question about that later, so I'll leave it at that for now. Yeah. Let's see. Well, what did you think about Nick's running the ball?
Again, Nick's running the ball was huge. And I think I honestly didn't expect us to show it that much in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest, you know, things that will help the overall running game going forward is Nick's running the ball.
Yes.
I mean, he didn't run the ball against Tulane, and the entire Tulane defense was kind of crashing into the center, the eight guys in the box trying to stop Whitlow going up the middle. And sometimes you have to just take what the defense gives you. And we know this from the past, from the kind of the Gus offense, and the optimal version of the 2019 Auburn offense is, you know, Bo Nix standing back there and Schwartz running by, you know, like to fake the sweep to him,
yeah,
to make the defense kind of back up and play wider to the side that Schwartz is running towards, and then Nick's doing the zone read with Whitlow, and if he needs to, keeping the ball. And I think the threat of Schwartz, you know, coming across, and the threat of, you know, Whitlow up the middle will open things, and Nix can keep the ball regularly and get 5 to 10 yards. I think it number one, it's there, and number two, the more he does it, the more it's going to open up things in the middle for Whitlow and make that easier. It's never going to be great, but it's going to be easier and better. That's and I right. think when we don't do the, and I think again, he's a true freshman, and we're talking about playing on the road next week. I think the run is where it's at for him. I think it made a huge difference in this game, and I think it's going to make a huge difference down the road. And you can see it. He can do it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he can make a difference running the ball. So
I don't want him to get killed, and it is easy to get hurt doing that. You got to be careful.
You know what?
But he does tend to run out of bounds, though.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, I would rather him get 5 to 10 yards and run out of bounds than try to get 12 yards and get killed every time.
He can run, 5 to 8 yards and get down or whatever if he has to, if he can't get out of bounds.
You know, I'm talking about Gatewood. The two things so far that seem less about him than Cam could do, and again, remember, Cam was a junior at this point. But the two things, he's not as elusive in the backfield as Cam, and he's not as fast in the open field as Cam. But he's also 20 pounds lighter, and we don't know about his passing yet. We don't really see it.
Yeah, and he's – the Cam thing is because of his size. He's not
– right.
I mean, Cam Newton is like a world-class athlete in terms of the twitchiness, like you're talking about, to make people miss, but also the high-end – run away from people's speed and power. And Gatewood is a big athletic quarterback who can run and make plays doing that. But it's a lot to put that on him, that kind of idea. I think he's doing well under the ball. I mean, I think he's decisive. And I think he's fast. And I think, defensive backs don't want any part of him.
No, not at all. What about Nix's passing real quick?
He's kind of struggled the first two games, but in this game, he was really good. I mean, he was 12 of 16, and two of those were drops where he hit a guy in the numbers and they dropped
it. Oh, he sure did, yeah.
The other two were passes where he didn't set his feet. He kind of rushed it. But again, the protection was there. So it's just a thing where he has to take his time to be confident and set his feet, and because the guys were open. But he was much better this game passing the ball. And I think that's a really good sign of him getting confident and also him kind of getting in sync with the receiver. I thought that was really – I get it's Kent State. I get all that. But I just think, you know, there were passes the first two games that, you know, he and the receiver were on different pages. And that didn't happen this week.
Well, he spread it around. I mean, Eli Stove clearly is back now and getting the bulk of the attention. But otherwise, and J.J. Wilson, I was happy to see him. We kept hearing so much about him in the off season that, oh, you know, watch out for J.J. Wilson. He's dominating. You know, he hasn't dropped a ball in practice in weeks. And he actually caught three. And then after them, Canella got one. Schwartz got one. There should be a statistic for Schwartz when he catches it with one hand, basically. But he was catching it in practice with the cast on. So, yeah, give him a shot. Hastings had one, and Joyner had one. So Joyner actually got five touches for 25 yards, so pretty good. So I like that we're spreading it around a little bit. It's not just one, although I do worry. It just worried me that Stove, we didn't even have him really last year, and this year he's the focal point of our passing game and half of our run game, you know?
Well, I don't worry too much about that because I think it was kind of a thing of a – I think we're – trying not to use Hastings until we need him. And then we did, you know, trying not to overuse Schwartz. And we didn't have Williams. I mean, I think the A team of receivers is Seth Williams and Schwartz and Hastings and Stove.
Yeah.
And you know, and Stove is like the fourth option then, you know? So I think he's a really good fourth option. Like he's dependable and he can make plays with the ball in his hand. So I feel good about that.
He's got to be our leading receiver for the season, right? It's not even close. Surely. At least in terms of catches. I don't know about yards. I mean, Seth might have more yards, but
you are correct.
Okay. In fact, Seth might not even be second. It might be Hastings second.
Hastings is second. Seth's third.
Yep. All right. See, that was a sense I had, but let's see. We got to talk about injuries real quick, and then we'll go into our other features. Like I said, we really didn't need the offensive line to suffer any injuries. So, of course, we have two injured offensive linemen now, which is the worst thing that could have happened other than having three. Prince Tega was already hobbling around with an injury that I am to understand will require surgery. It's just one of those injuries where it's not going to get any worse, so he's going to play through it. I hate those because it means you're going to be less than 100% all season. That really sucks. And then his replacement this game, I forgot who it was.
Bailey Sharp.
Yeah, Bailey Sharp. He got hurt. He's out for like 6 weeks. So we're going into the meat of our schedule down basically 1.5 offensive linemen and having to reshuffle the deck again when the main thing you want on an offensive line is consistency.
Well, I mean, I think they held out Prince Tega to give him a week to get better. He's going to play this week. And again, like you said, he's not going to be 100%, but I think he's going to be pretty good I think he'll be fine. So I think it's, you know, Sharp hurts. I mean, again, I think people didn't think Sharp could go out and make a difference against a big SEC team, but I think you're right in the sense that he was an experienced guy that if we had to throw somebody in a tackle, he could do that and do the assignments and stuff. So if Tega or, you know, Jack Driscoll has to miss time going forward, then we'll have to, you know, go to other options. So
Derek Brown, upper body contusion after the first series.
I think he got banged up, the wind knocked at him or something, and they were like, you know what, it's Kent State. We're not even risking anything here. Just get him off the field. I don't know. And people said he looked sick. People said he had a bruise on his upper body. I don't know. But I think he's fine. I think he'll play this week. Yeah.
Still hoping Seth comes back. And we got Schwartz back with one hand. But Schwartz with one hand is better than a lot of guys with two hands, so that's good.
It is, and at some point the cast is going to come off. Hopefully this week. You know, I don't know that, but I hope that. And because I think him with the cast off could be a huge lift for this offense.
Oh, yeah. More? Are you more looking forward to him in the running game or the passing game?
I mean, I think with Stove and the other guys, the running game's maybe there, but I think it's not as explosive as it can be mm-hmm. with him in the running game. I really think, you know, that we could get it back to that, you know, him running around the end could get back to that Ontario McCaleb level of making a difference there.
Were you surprised that the transfer with Farrar didn't play at all, or did he play and we just and didn't record a statistic?
I mean, I think he's just not going to make a difference this year. I think that's where we are. Mm. I mean, I think they brought him in to give him a shot, and but I think he's, you know, he's not making a difference at receiver. So
no, I guess not. Did you see that we have a new punter? We had
with Bo
Nix, the punter. I was watching Brandon's post game video with his co-worker there, lady, and Brandon was admitting he didn't watch all the game because I think he was working on that Christy Malzahn story that was really good. He put up today or yesterday? I guess yes. It was this morning. It was really good, but he was working on that, so he didn't watch the whole game. Can't really blame him. But he was going through the statistics. He says, Bo Nix had a punt. He goes, did that happen? That couldn't have happened. Nah, that's got to be a mistake. And I'm sitting there going, no, people are all going to be emailing you now or tweeting you going, it did happen. It did. And it was not a bad punt.
It was. It was. I mean, again, it's the old Gus quick kick thing. So I was pretty happy with it.
But, you know,
I think it was effective.
He's had quarterbacks throw a pass out of that punt formation. Remember Cam did it several times.
I like it. It keeps the defense special teams kind of unsure.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about Kent State?
No, I mean, they were way overmatched, and I get all that and stuff. I think that a lot of times when you're playing teams like this, you're showing stuff so that other teams down the road are taking some away from it. And I think when we do things like the quarterback run on the zone read and the flea flicker, a lot of what we're doing is making the other teams not stack the box because that's what Tulane did. And so we came out this week and said, if you do that, we're going to make you pay. I think that's what those specific plays. I mean, the flea flicker specifically was like a message to future safeties, like don't just play the run and run up in the box every time because we're watching you.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was about as good of a tune-up game as you could really have, other than maybe a couple of injuries. But that's just going to happen. So, I guess I feel about as good going into College Station Saturday as you could feel, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But first, a couple other things. Jared is back. Jared, the yard sale artist, is back with this week's superhero analogy battle. And I like to just play these now and not listen to them in advance so I can have an honest reaction. And I've really gotten to be a big fan of Jared's eagle and what adventures that wild beast is up to. So let's find out what's going on and which superheroes Jared is associating with the Kent State game.
Hello, everyone. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade Podcast Network, here with your Auburn superhero battles. Well, the good news is, folks, I'm going to be giving us a power upgrade this week as Auburn took on Kent State. Auburn looked a bit like Luke Cage, the power man himself, with a very tough hide, which gives us a good defense, and being generally pretty strong. Kent State was very fast. They used speed to their advantage and did fairly well against the tougher Luke Cage-style opponent. So I am saying they are like Quicksilver. So here we have Luke Cage versus Quicksilver. And Quicksilver can use that speed to get some hits in on Luke Cage, but Luke Cage can pretty much so absorb them and wear down Quicksilver until he gets his hands on him, and then, you know, it's all over. And that's essentially what our Auburn Tigers did to Kent State. So let's see what happens next week as we get into a tougher league of heroes and villains, mostly villains. But until then, unfortunately, Pat's not here. He is in the hospital, as you might imagine. I've got him up on Skype, and he's showing me he's got a get well package. And who's it from? He can't talk, so he's holding up the camera. It's from the Eagle.
Oh, no.
Go ahead and open that. Let's see what the Eagle got you.
The Eagles. The Eagles set off a bomb, I am to believe, right? We got to find out more. I'm going to have to get Jared to clue us in on what horrific thing his eagle has done now. I think he did a bombing. It may be a terrorist eagle. I'm not entirely sure.
Or the eagle mailed himself to the guy in the hospital. I think that's kind of what it was.
Oh, man. Interesting. Okay. He's either a terrorist bomber eagle or he mailed himself into the hospital to attack him again. Either way, it's pretty insidious. Wow. All right. Very good. We thank Jared for his awesome superhero battles every week. That's really a cool feature we've added the last couple of years. Now, speaking of thanking people, we got to thank our patrons who keep our show on the air. And I have enough strength this week, John. Now, my wife has told me, as she did last week, that at the hour mark, she's coming down here and basically unplugging the mic. So whatever we've gotten into the can in an hour is where the show ends, if we haven't ended by there.
So if the show ends abruptly, you know what happened.
You know it was Ms. Amy, and you don't argue with her. But let's see. I do have to thank our patrons, and since I didn't get to thank them personally last week, I want to make sure and do that this week. Remember, for as little as a dollar a month, you can be part of the AU Wishbone Auburn family and help keep this show and our other programs on the air. Remember, we do On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, where we talk about James Bond. We have a bunch of several different shows going on that network constantly. It's on a different feed, so go to secretpodcast.podbean.com or just look up On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast on Twitter, on iTunes. And we also have the White Rocket podcast that's been around as long as the Wishbone. John's been on it a bunch, have other people on it all the time, and I've been doing some of the Dragon Con panels that I recorded this year, so I'll be posting those on the White Rocket podcast. And then our third one, of course, is the AU Wishbone, the show you're listening to now. And all of those, we don't do advertisements. They're entirely supported by our listeners. So go to www.auwishbone.com and sign up to be a patron for as little as a dollar a month. You get all kind of benefits that are detailed on that page. But let me thank the folks who have done it so far. As always, we thank Brennan O'Dwyer. We have several new ones. We've got Matthew Flowers, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Carl Von Drunker. Trevor Johnson, Phil Amthor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. We have another couple of new ones down here. We got AU Falling Up. I like that. Trading Alchemist. This is like interesting folks' usernames that we're getting now. And then Ross, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, David Hegler, Robert Mendenhall, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, and John McCune. And then we've got Tom Anderson, Dave Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Ulrich, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Spanky, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor Sanford, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Brandon Smith, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Jeremy Minton, Lane Middleton, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin. We're getting close to the end. Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Ward Amway, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Steven Schuster, James Taylor. Don't have quite the energy and wind I used to, but I'll get it back. John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller. I'm seeing spots swimming around my head, John. Mark Squire, Brant Rumble. Oh, the world is getting upside down. J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, our awesome one-time and occasional donors, including Surfa Chickify and our anonymous donors. All right, that took a lot out of me. So let me take a breath. Close out the box score from the football game. And again, thank you guys for doing that, for being our patrons. www.auwishbone.com. And tell a friend about the show. This season, you know, our listener numbers are up. We're pulling in around 2,000 downloads an episode in some weeks now, some more than that, and that's awesome. And so tell a friend. We're not going anywhere. We've been here. This is our eighth season. And we'll stick around if you'll stick around. So tell a friend. www.auwishbone.com. I got to say, Johnny, in other news, we've been following this story off the air for several weeks now. There is an Alabama fan named Doug who contacted us by email several weeks ago because he had made a bet with his Auburn buddy that he was betting Oregon would beat Auburn. Well, I could have told him that he was wrong there, but he went ahead and did it anyway. The loser had to get their head shaved and painted up in the other team's colors and publicize it. And I've never been a big one for this kind of bet because it just seems like a good way to end up having to do something like that, because, you know, the odds are if you actually agree to something like that, you're going to lose. And I hate it for him, but he lost because Auburn won. And I would hate it for him more if he was an Oregon fan, but he's an Alabama fan betting on Oregon to do his dirty work for him. So we are promised pictures, and pictures, if we get them, we will tweet them out on the Wishbone account, and those that enjoy such things can revel in the glory. All right, what is next, my friend?
We're going to talk about the Aggies.
My high school, yes, the Sylacauga Aggies, a fine team. What about them? Why did you want to talk about them tonight? Or is that
it's
the wrong?
It's their Aggies? Day, man. It's their week.
Oh, okay. No, it's the Texas A&M, the Collie Dogs. Reveille.
That's it. It's that time again. We're going back to College Station.
Yep.
Where Auburn has seemed to play well.
Yes. Even the 2015 team won in College Station. So come on. Right.
Truth.
I mean, if we always win there, knock on wood, the 2015 team won there, knock on wood. So surely this one's already in the bag, right?
I don't know about that.
It doesn't work that way, does it?
No, doesn't it really does work not. That
way. All right. So what do we think about? What do we think about Texas A&M?
I think they're a good team. I think they're a very good team. I think they are comparable, you know, overall level of football team is they're comparable to Oregon.
Oh, great.
Team.
Fantastic.
I'm being honest about what I think of them. I don't think they're great or anything, but I think they're solid. They're a good team. Like the biggest, they've played, you know, two teams that are worse than Kent State, and they played Clemson. Okay.
Yeah.
And so they dominated the two teams that are worse than Kent State, and Clemson basically beat them 26-3, and then Clemson scored on the last play of the game and made it 26-10 or whatever. So that's what we know about them.
Okay.
I watched the A&M Clemson game. I watched a little bit of the other games, the beginning parts. Kellen Mond is back. He did not play well against Clemson. Their offensive line, as you know, the biggest difference between them and Oregon is that, you know, the Texas A&M offensive line is being rebuilt basically, and they're not as good as they were last year, and they're not nearly as good as the Oregon offensive line. And Clemson gave them problems, and then I think, you know, Mond has gotten in this place where he doesn't run. He wants to prove he's a stand in the pocket passer quarterback. And so he doesn't do a bunch of running. And then the receivers had some drops and he had some incompletions against Clemson. And Clemson, shut the run down and that was it. So their starting running back, you know, again, the number one, the Auburn killer, Trayvon Williams, is gone.
Oh, thank goodness.
That guy, I'm so thankful that guy's in the NFL because he killed us the entire time he was there. So, and then their running back that was supposed to be the starter, a guy named Corbin, got hurt and he's out for the season. So they're starting a true freshman named Isaiah Spiller, who's a 6'1", 210, kind of solid running back, productive. But not the same level, I think, as – I mean, again, they've recruited well at that position. They got some good players, but not the same level as Trayvon Williams was.
Right.
I think their offense against our defense, I think their offensive line is not nearly as good as Oregon, so our defensive line ought to have some success there. I think we can tackle well in space against their receivers or running backs. A lot of it comes down to Mond making plays. Mm-hmm. If they're going to win, he's got to be very accurate with the ball, and he's got to kind of do that thing where he makes the plays himself. He's got to, you know, hit guys downfield, and he's got to move around and make stuff happen. So, defensively, they're solid. They've lost some of the talent from last year they had on defense. I think, defensively, in the range of what we saw from Oregon. I mean, they're an SEC defense, but they're not on the same level as us or Georgia or whatever. They're fast and they're athletic. They have some good defensive linemen, and those guys played well against Clemson and did a good job against the Clemson running game. If you are Texas A&M and you're their defense, what is your plan against this Auburn team? And to me, it's 100% they're going to line up and take away the running game.
Absolutely.
And make Bo Nix beat them.
100%. Absolutely.
They feel like their biggest advantage is it's a true freshman quarterback coming into that stadium with that crowd.
Yep.
They're going to try to rattle him.
Yep.
And I think the other thing is, we've talked about this a lot on this show over the years in different games, in different contexts, but we have to have enough bullets in our gun,
mm-hmm.
And if Seth Williams doesn't play and Schwartz has a cast on his hand, do we have enough bullets in our gun to go into College Station and beat them?
Man, it's tough. I mean, you've got to figure out ways to use what we have, right? I mean, you've got to find ways to get to free Whitlow up, to get some tough yards, different. They're going to have to use different strategies on the offensive line to open up holes for Whitlow and then maybe for Gatewood. They're going to have to find ways to protect Nix long enough that he can get a pass off. It seems like when they really want Nix to pass and pass more than just a dump, they keep Max Protect, and they really only give him a couple of options, which, by the way, that's very frustrating to me, because I feel like if we would just let the running back or the H-back tight end go on a little delay drag across the middle like a safety valve, it would be so much better for Nix. Nix right now, his job is, have like seven guys blocking for him, drop back, check option one, check option two, and then throw the ball out of bounds.
Yes. And the other thing is, and this was happened in the Kent State game, because we could run the ball in that game, it was all play action. And play action is 100 times more effective than regular just drop back passing. We all know this. Like, it sucks the defense in.
Yeah.
People think, you're just messing around with that play action stuff. It matters. It makes a difference. There's been a bunch of analytics stuff in the NFL this year about the effectiveness play action passing and how much better it is. And I think this is the thing where if we can run the ball even just a little bit, that play action pass will enable Nix to have some success. And I think he can make plays. I think he can make plays running. I think he can make plays kind of running, to keep himself alive and then throw it. And I think he can make plays like just throwing the ball if we give him a little bit of help. But I think you're right. I almost want to say we're going to have to manufacture some offense, which conjures some images of terrible Gus games for some people.
Yes.
But I think what I said before about Gatewood really comes in here. I think we have to look at Gatewood not as just a short yardage guy, a goal line guy, whatever. We have to look at him as a guy that we can get put in this game to get yards when we need him.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's going to get us to one of those questions, too. So let's hold that thought. So, and then what about special teams? I mean, you said they have a great punter, you noted.
They have a great punter. I mean, and I think part of their game plan, again, it's home field advantage, putting pressure on Knicks. They're going to try and play field position and pin us back deep regularly so that Bo Nix is starting on the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be aware of that and have some ways to, you know, to be aggressive and not be, like, timid when we're down there, in the, you know, in close to the back up to our end zone.
We can hope Christian Tuck gives us some breathing room, but how would you feel about if we went after some punts?
We can, but again, their punter is really, really, really good. And their special teams are excellent. They're pretty good. So if we get one, that'd be awesome. I mean, we've seen in this rivalry before, block kicks make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I'm all for that, but and maybe the guy punts a little too far, and like you're saying, Tut makes him pay for it. So I like that.
All right. We got to move along here. So predictions, I just feel like the stars line up when we go to College Station. So I'm not going to pick against Auburn in College Station. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be every bit as hard fought as the Oregon game. In fact, they are ranked one step above Oregon now. I noticed in the AP for this week. But I think we can pull it out in maybe a field goal at the end. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a close game like that was, a hard-fought game, kind of back and forth. But I think, again, I think the best unit on the field is Auburn's defense.
Yeah.
And they're going to make their presence felt over the course of the game. They're going to tighten the screws on A&M and limit what they can do. And I think that's going to be the difference where at the end of the game – you know, they can A&M's not going to be able to get anything done, and we'll be able to get enough done to win. And I think, you know, a big thing, like you said, may either a special teams return or maybe a turnover by the defense to give the offense some short fields to work with.
And they're due.
Could be we're due for that. I think that could really happen and be the difference in the game.
And I got to also mention real quick that some of our defensive players that – you know, Smoke Monday's not going to be able to play in the first half because of that targeting thing. Mm-hmm. But some of our defensive players we weren't even really counting on to contribute much this year have been stepping up. A couple on the defensive line, a couple in the backfield, the safety type area. So our defense, even if Derek Brown is not 100%, and we don't know, they're looking pretty impressive even in depth on the defense, you know? Better than we thought.
Truesdale, who's been the main fill-in for Dontavius Russell, has been great.
Yeah.
He's been really good, not just a plugger, but a guy who's actively making plays. And then we've had some decent depth behind him and Derek Brown. And I think Marlon Davidson, again, was stepped up and raised his level of play this year a lot. And I think you're right. The secondary has been very good. Roger McCreary, again, has continued to play well. He's kind of the third cornerback now, that kind of getting a lot of playing time. It's kind of Igbinyagani and the little short guy, defensive back. So I feel really good about the defense. I think they're solid. They're well coached. I think they're gonna do their job this weekend. I mean, again, we may not win the game, but Texas A&M isn't scoring more than like 23 points.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, at most, and probably more like 17.
Yeah, I think so. All right, moving along. We got to go to London quickly.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, let's hear the best, because we got about 10 minutes left.
All right. First is from John Bacune on Twitter. He says, why do our pom-poms always look crimsonish on TV?
I know, it's weird. The colors on our stripes on our jerseys do sometimes, too. It's weird.
From Tony Barnhard, he says, after three games, I have 341 yards rushing, 114 yards per game, and I'm averaging 5.3 yards per carry. Why the hate from some Auburn fans? Signed, Booby Whitlow.
Now, I mean, we're used to a certain type of back and a certain standard. And he's still a work in progress, don't you think? I mean, not take anything away from
yes.
him.
Yes.
Nothing negative on him.
But 100%.
He's just a work in progress. So it's fair.
Yeah. He's not, again, he's a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah. Who didn't play running back until recently.
Yeah. So I think he's, but part of the work in progress label means we think he can get better too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
From Auburn Chris, should Joey Gatewood take over as the Wildcat quarterback? It seems like he can add some passing and power elements that Booby does not. I agree. Like, to me, there's no point in doing the Wildcat.
Well, all right. Here's the thing with that. This is why I was saving it till this. I agree in theory. I just want to point out that if you make Gatewood the quote-unquote Wildcat quarterback, it's not the Wildcat anymore because he's actually a quarterback. The whole point of the Wildcat is you're using somebody who's not a quarterback in order to increase the number of players on the field that can block. So if you make the quarterback the Wildcat quarterback, you haven't changed the numbers at all, right? I mean, it just... So, in other words, what you're saying is instead of using the Wildcat, just have Gatewood run the ball as a running quarterback. And that's fine. It's just... It's not the Wildcat anymore.
No, it's not technically the Wildcat anymore. You're 100% correct.
Okay.
But I think it is Gatewood running the ball is more effective than a running back in the Wildcat. And I think, again, Gatewood can throw the ball. And I think at the goal line this year, we're 100% going to see the, you know, Gatewood throw the ball or do the little Tebow jump pass, that kind of stuff.
And I'm not 100% on board with the theory that Gatewood at running quarterback in the red zone is a better option than Booby at Wildcat, because Booby at Wildcat has been very effective, and I've seen Gatewood get tackled in the backfield a couple times too many to just where I don't see Booby get tackled in the backfield like that. So I again, in theory, I'm kind of with it, but I'm not 100% that that's an improvement.
I agree.
Okay.
We had two different people, Willie Carden and Arbor Chris, both asked us about the point in the game when after Bo scored on a keeper, like Gus was chewing him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, did you see that or what did you think?
I couldn't tell what was the deal. I saw it, but Gus is usually yelling at somebody mad about something, so.
And again, like, it may have been had something to do with, like, what he did with the ball after he scored or something.
It could be anything, yeah. And let me just tell you, if you haven't read Brandon Marcello's great article where he talks about Christy Malzahn, there's a little bit about that in there. And there's a little bit, too, about Smoke Monday. I love how she's in she's in that lounge, and when he gets ejected, she sends her state trooper guy to go get him from the locker room and come in and talk to her, and she kind of talks to him about and fusses at him, and then kind of, you know, she kind of like smooths it over. So she plays a really vital role that people don't realize. I thought that was cool.
It was a great article, and everyone should go read that 100%.
Yeah.
From Chris Thrash last week, he says, Vane and John, last week's discussion regarding Auburn fans comparing ourselves to Bama got me thinking, do you think Clemson's success has contributed to any dissatisfaction on Auburn Twitter? Comparisons have always been made between the two schools.
Yeah.
Perhaps some fans look at Clemson's success and say, why not us?
I've said that. I've outright, he's quoting me. I've said, why is that them and not us? I have said that. I mean, you know, well, A, they're not in the same state as Alabama. B, they're not in the SEC at all, much less the SEC West. So they got a little thing going there about 6, 7, 8 years ago, and they've kept that ball rolling, and they've had certain advantages that we don't have that's let them boost it up to this level. I mean, I think if Auburn was in the ACC and Clemson was in the SEC West, it could be us more often than it's been Clemson, honestly. But, yeah, I say that all the time. Why do they get to have all this? Why can't we have it? It's not fair.
Yeah. And the ACC is terrible this year.
Clemson basically has been 2010, 2013 Auburn for like 5 years, and that ticks me off. Because we get there and drop back down again, they've actually been able to sustain it for a little while. That's the main thing.
All right. Our next question is an email. AEWishbone@gmail.com from Scott Crankton, who says, "Dear AE Wishbone, what is more certain? A, the sun rising in the east. B, a hurry up first down handoff up the gut."
Oh God! And he said,
"How many years, John?" He says, "I would say B, since it takes light from the sun nearly 8 minutes and 20 seconds to reach us, and the first down play happens quicker than
quicker than that.
And he says, "Van, continued health, regards, Scott Crankton."
Many thanks. No, you and I have said for years that Gus has been setting something up, and this is his, well, if you count all the way to 2009, this is like his 11th big season of setting something up, man. When he pulls out that pass, that play-action pass on second and short in the hurry-up, whatever team is finally the recipient of that genius is going to have their mind blown. And it's coming. It may be this year or next year. It may be 3 or 4 years from now. But he is setting that thing up, and it's going to blow some people's mind when he does it. Oh, my gosh.
Boy. Last question from Winston Bodie, who says, "I can't believe how negative some of our fan base is for a team that's undefeated. I understand the offense hasn't played up to the hype of the offseason, but my goodness, we have a true freshman starting quarterback. I believe the ceiling for this team is much higher than the floor. So my question is, do you remember a season like this in the past where the fan base was so negative with a team, I believe, that still has its best ahead? I was thinking 2003, but that was only half the season."
Yeah.
"The first game kind of told the story for the rest of the season."
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to really think about it. We don't have time to go in. I'll have to put some thought in that during the week. But, yeah, I mean, it's just – it's with any coach. I mean, yeah, if you go back, you know, the latter years of Tuberville or Terry or even Pat Dye, when the fans start to get on board the maybe this isn't the right coach bandwagon, and that's putting it very politely, then you do see people – writing off and blowing off even a good start. So, yeah. Let's see. In our last couple of minutes here, I'll just take a quick trip around the SEC. Kentucky and Florida?
Come on. Come on, man.
That's what I'm saying. Golly, Kentucky. Kentucky had me thinking we were going to walk into the swamp and kick butt, and then they put their backup in after Franks got hurt. And they can't score 19 points and beat Kentucky. So what the heck?
You know, their backup, Trask, was pretty good. Again, he led them from 17 down to beat Kentucky. And I think some of it is Florida just owns them. It's just that
they're
100% own that rivalry.
Yeah, just like Alabama or Mississippi State. Kansas State beat Mississippi State. I enjoyed that. It was a good, hard-fought game. And I thought Kansas State outplayed them. But Mississippi State hung in there and had a chance to win. Otherwise,
I like Mississippi State's backup quarterback. I thought he looked solid.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Coming up next week, Tennessee at Florida is the 11 o'clock game. How far has that rivalry fallen? Tennessee Florida used to be for a brief moment, for one shining moment. Tennessee and Florida was the number one rivalry in the SEC around 1997-98. And it's the 11 o'clock game this week. Wow. Cal Ole Miss, that's some culture shock. I can't even imagine what the Berkeley folks are going to think.
Really good Cal defense, too. So.
Yeah, of course they're going to get better. They're getting ready to play us soon.
They beat Washington. I think they could beat Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's true. Kentucky, Mississippi State will be a fun game. South Carolina at Missouri will be fun. Notre Dame at Georgia. Assuming that Notre Dame can do anything in Athens, we'll see. Southern Miss at Bama, that's an old rivalry that I've missed. I'm glad to see it back. I wish Southern Miss was better. Arkansas plays San Jose State, and then Auburn plays in the 2:30 game against Texas A&M. That should be a lot of fun. Any final thoughts, John, before we wrap up for this week?
I have some final thoughts. I think people look around college football in 2019 at all the other freshman quarterbacks who are throwing up a gazillion yards, and they think, we're doing this so wrong. Only Gus would hold back this great freshman quarterback and and limit what he's doing, and it's terrible and all this kind of stuff. And I just want to give you a very quickly a couple of numbers from another freshman quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that freshman quarterback was Jake Fromm of Georgia, who happened to lead his team to the national title game that season.
Yes, he did.
Here are a couple of his, for example, here's Jake Fromm's first road start after, you know, he started during the Notre Dame, he played during the Notre Dame game when the other quarterback got hurt. I don't think the other I think Easton got hurt during that game. But so Fromm's first real road start was at Tennessee. He was 7 for 15 for 84 yards, one touchdown, one interception.
Wow.
The next week, he was at Vanderbilt, 7 for 11 for 102 yards.
Wow.
So against Florida, he was 4 for 7. So I think, you know, people want to say, oh, Gus is holding him back, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's fine. But there's a time when he's going to let Nick throw the ball a bunch, but there's also times when he's going to keep a tight rein on him. And I think, you know, Nick can win this game for us without throwing the ball 30 times. He can run the ball. He can make good decisions and make things happen. And I think that's what we need in this game.
Pat Dye looks at that stat line of 7 passes and goes, why y'all slinging the ball around so much? 7 passes. No, you're exactly right. I think that people look at the upside and they want to think, what could he be doing? But they don't want to look at the downside, which is you stick him out there and have him throw a bunch of interceptions by trying to make him do too much, and then you just ruin him. You know what I mean? You could. So better.
Sure. And I get it. People look at like the Boise State quarterback or some of these other quarterbacks who were throwing the ball 50 times a game and whatever. And I think Nick's could put up huge numbers if we let him throw the ball 50 times a game. But I think you're right. I think he would turn the ball over and other things would happen. So
yeah, you just got to be careful, play it carefully, and we'll see. All right. Well, our time is up and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.